Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for standing by, and welcome to the update on Oyster Global Convertibles conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone. And I also must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Monday the 22nd of January, 2018. And I would now like to turn the conference call over to your speaker, for Tom George, Head of Fund Platform. Thank you. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is my pleasure to welcome you on this Oyster UCITS call on behalf of Seas Asset Management. Please let me introduce Art Woodson, Co-Portfolio Manager of the Oyster Global Convertible Fund. Hart is a Senior Investment Professional and Managing Director at Advent Capital Management, which he joined in 2006. Advent was appointed as sub-manager of the Oyster Fund since its inception in September 2009 and implements a long, defensive convertible bond strategy. Hart will discuss the convertible bond market, the positioning of the fund, and the 2017 performance. Hart, over to you.
Okay, thanks, Bertrand. Welcome, everybody, to the call. Just a few words about Advent. We're based in New York City with an office in London. We manage about $9 billion in assets in total, primarily in long-only convertible bonds. We pride ourselves on our credit-first approach. We have 26 investment professionals focused on convertible bonds, and we have sort of a 360-degree approach to looking at the asset class, which means we also have a hedge fund business as well, so we think that we're very involved in the convertible market. Let me turn now to why convertibles. In this current environment, there's been, first of all, new issuance. We just finished quite a good year in new issuance with close to $80 billion in new issuance globally. And that was the fifth year running where we had a net increase in total supply of convertible bonds. And this year we're actually off to quite a good start as well, almost $8 billion in convertible issuance in the month of January year to date. Last year we had about $5 billion in issuance, and we're seeing interest globally from Europe, from the likes of Michelin, et cetera, as well as Japan and non-Japan Asia, as well as the U.S. So I think when we see now a period of rising interest rates, obviously the Fed has started to move in that direction, as well as globally we're starting to see relaxation of central bank quantitative easing policies, that this bodes very well for further new issuance of convertibles as well. Also, we see that one thing that people tend to agree on now is that volatility in the market is the one particularly cheap asset. We know that the VIX, VDAX, et cetera, have all been at historic lows for some time. And we anticipate as we see changes in these monetary policies around the world that this volatility is likely to perk up again, which could be not only good for the asset class, but for the expected return of the asset class going forward. With the Trump economics, there have been a number of other positive things happening in the convert market. Not only is the U.S. GDP growth continuing to be buoyant, as well as the synchronized growth around the world, but some of the recent tax policies are particularly beneficial to convertibles, not only just because of companies with high effective tax rates, which we have in the portfolio, will benefit from the lower corporate tax rate. But in terms of new issuance, for example, there's a provision that limits interest cover to 30% of EBITDA for issuers for tax deductibility on straight debt. So we think we'll see some spillover from the high yield market into the convertible market, which will be a positive. Also, from an investment point of view, this repatriation of funds abroad, and remember there was something like $11 trillion of cash held abroad, mainly by technology companies and pharmaceutical companies. If that comes back to the U.S., then we expect to see more buybacks, dividend payments, M&A activity. And as you know, the convertible market's dominated by issuers in these particular segments. So we saw, for example, the Apple announcement the other day. So that should bode well for convertibles. So I think convertibles make a lot of sense, especially for investors who have an exposure to core fixed income, where they have a high duration risk. You know, investment-grade corporate bonds have 7 or 8 year duration risk. High yield has around a 4 year duration risk. Convertibles have typically around 2 years. So you're not giving up a lot of current income versus straight debt. You're reducing your duration risk. You're adding positive convexity to your portfolio. And these should all help to improve the efficiency of your portfolio if you substitute some convertibles either for fixed income or your equities. Let me push on to how convertibles do on rising interest rate environments. We have a chart here that demonstrates that in those periods of rising interest rates, convertibles tend to outperform longer duration asset classes like treasuries and investment-grade corporate bonds. And this is because, of course, when the economy is getting stronger, interest rates tend to migrate higher. The equity market can also continue to do well, and the embedded equity option in the convertibles then can favor the convertible bond. The other thing to just point out over the last 30 years is that convertibles have generated an equity-like return, which is in the U.S. market around 10%, with about two-thirds of the standard deviation of the S&P 500, let's say in this case, and a correlation to equities of about 0.8 or so. So by definition, it is a separate asset class, and by definition, it can improve the efficient frontier if you mix convertibles into your portfolio. Just a little word on the global top-down sort of environment, although we're very much a bottom-up investor, but we, of course, take into consideration some of the larger investment themes. We talked a little bit about what was driving activity in the U.S. with still relatively accommodative and low interest rates, fact that many companies have strong balance sheets and M&A activity is likely to increase, the fact that the U.S. Convertible market is now over 50%, almost 60% of the global market, so this is a market that offers attractive yield and equity sensitivity. In Europe, we would expect to see, as I mentioned earlier, with it, more volatility perking up as the European Central Bank starts to migrate its policy. We also have a lot of bonds there that have attractive ratchet features, so that if there's a change of control or a takeover in a certain company, then we, as convertible investors, get more stock, which benefits us. We've had, for example, Buwog being taken over by Vonovia in the portfolio. Japan, the valuations there from an equity point of view look very compelling. The Bank of Japan has started to flirt with relaxing its very accommodative policy, but nonetheless, the 10-year treasury rate there remains very close to zero, and we think that the yen will continue to be rather weak, which will be beneficial to the exporting holdings we have in the portfolio. And then in Asia, we saw the positive stimulative policies coming through the Party Congress recently, and we continue to see relatively strong economic growth from China, so we think that we're going to have more of a softer landing there, if you will, and there's interesting opportunities both in the luxury sectors. Demographic trends are favorable as the middle class grows, and also in infrastructure spending in particular with the One Belt, One Road prospects. So let me talk a little bit about just very quickly on structural transformation of the convertible market. It used to be that convertibles were very long dated, 30 years. Now they tend to be 5 to 7 years. They have extended call protection and these protective features for dividend increases and also ratchets. So we think that the structure of the market has actually improved over time. It's about a $440 billion market, which is, as I said, a little more than half in the U.S. and then about a third in Europe and about 10% in Japan and non-Japan Asia. So let's go on to page 10, the characteristics and performance. Quick note on investment process. As I mentioned, we're very much a bottom-up investment manager, and credit's the first thing that we consider. So So we use our technology to survey the entire universe and find bonds that have positive asymmetry that fit into our strategy. Then we ask ourselves, are we going to get paid back? Is it a stable to improving credit? And then once we're convinced that that's the case, we'll then consider the equity opportunity. We look for catalysts that will unlock the cheapness of the stock, whether they be hard catalysts like a change of management or a new product, or a soft catalyst like a regulatory change, and how close in time this is, if it's within 3 months or so, or if it's maybe over 9 to 12 months, and we'll allocate capital according to how quickly we see this catalyst materializing. And we build the portfolio from there, and then, of course, monitor it for any necessary sell considerations if the convertible reaches our price target or becomes too equity sensitive. We would reduce it or eliminate it from the portfolio, or if there's any deterioration in the fundamentals of the stock. Now, that's the basic backdrop of convertibles, but on the next page we talk about differentiating factors for AZNET Bank seizes Oyster philosophy in this fund in particular, which is rather unique. And this is a strategy that AZNET's pursued for over 20 years. And the principles here are, first of all, very, very simple, to buy a low and sell high, which, of course, not to be facetious, but that is a key principle in investment management. And we are, unlike an equity manager who might be emotionally tied to their stock position, we actually have a very well-articulated discipline for doing this. So we will only buy the bonds when they are within 20% of what we call the investment value or the bond floor. That's what the bond would trade for if it was just a straight bond and didn't have any equity option embedded in it. And then once these bonds migrate 30% higher, so around a price of 130, 140, then we scale out of them. So that's the first thing. With the credit fundamental approach, as I already mentioned, we also tend to look for out-of-favor names that have fallen down. They have missed a short-term earnings announcement that allow them to fall down into this range, or some exogenous shock to the market, like an oil spill or an earthquake or something that might have pushed the whole sector down when it was not necessarily relevant to all the holdings in that sector. This doesn't mean we can't buy some new issues which are investment grade rated from the beginning that have investment values that from new issuance are perhaps 95% of par. So we are also able to participate in many of these new issues as well. And then we look for, of course, an a catalyst that's going to unlock the value of these bonds. We can turn now to the performance over the last several years, this year. And we can see year-to-date the fund was up on a net basis 2.7%. We would expect a return from this type of strategy of sort of mid to high single-digit returns over time, as has been the case. Some of the drivers from this return we can see based on the portfolio positioning. That can be seen in the following page on page 14 that gives some of the characteristics of the portfolio. The delta tends to run between a sort of 20 to 40 type range. It's currently at just 40% delta, which is at the higher end of the range as the markets have been strong recently. Conversion premium is 48% of the investment over the bond floor is 19%. As I mentioned, we initiate positions at 20% or below. The current income is around 1.5%, which for an investment grade average rated portfolio of BBB- is actually very close to equivalent straight bond, but with much less duration risk, as I mentioned previously. You can see the top 10 holdings on this page as well. So this is a mix of various sectors and geographies. Wells Fargo is a convertible preferred that has a very attractive current yield. Dish Networks is a U.S.-based company with the satellite spectrum assets, which we think are very attractive, which could be an acquisition target. Hungarian State is actually Gedeon Richter, which is a pharmaceutical company in Hungary. Element Fleet Management is a leasing company, which has some activist investors involved with it, and we also think there could be a change of control possibility there. We have a few holdings in biotech names like Jazz and BioMarin. Bagan is actually convertible into Beijing Enterprise Water, which is one of the infrastructure investments in China that, as the government is focusing on clean air, clean water. This is a company which we think can do very well, also in combination with private partnerships to help boost returns. Total, the French energy group, and then Telenor, the investment-grade Norwegian telecom, which did an exchangeable bond into Zeon, which is a Russia/emerging market-based telecom provider. And On Semiconductor, which, of course, technology being one of the major leading sectors last year. We can see this also on the following page, the breakdown by both region and sector. What you can observe from this is that, and maybe it's interesting to say versus the sort of benchmark as a whole, but we tend to be, as I mentioned, a little bit long delta to the benchmark, so maybe about 10 deltas long to the benchmark, which is more of a 30-type delta. And we tend now to be overweight, if you look at it from where that extra 10 deltas is distributed, about six of those deltas is actually in Europe, as we become more overweight Europe, and also in Japan, where we're about three deltas, and then Asia, about one delta. That makes up one or two deltas. So that makes up the overweight by geography. And the underweight is actually in the United States. So even though we have 45% of the, or 49% of the portfolio in the U.S., actually we're slightly underweight from a delta point of view. And then from a sector point of view, you will see that we are overweight in healthcare and industrials. We like the cyclical stocks, technology, as we continue to see growth in these sectors. And then maybe it's interesting to comment that it's important to understand that about 50% or more of the global convertible market, that $440 billion, is actually non-rated. And some of those are, of course, investment grade, quasi-investment grade, some not. But you'll note that 56% of the portfolio, and similar to the market as a whole, is actually non-rated. So that's why it's very important to have a deep team of credit analysts who can do the work on this part of the market where there are a lot of interesting alpha-generating opportunities. The final page here is some attribution by sector, which we had already talked about. Some of the better sectors for us last year were in technology. That would be some names like Alibaba or Alibaba, which is the old Yahoo. Micron Technology, ASM, some of the Asian telecom names on Semi that we talked about. Energy was also a positive sector. Some of the negative sectors included some sins of omission in terms of not owning Tesla and consumer discretionary, and having a position also in Steinhoff, which was a negative 12 basis points for us in terms of relative performance for the year. By region, Japan was one of the better regions for us, with Suzuki being a standout, contributing 38 basis points of relative performance as the company generated strong growth in its Indian holdings as well as its domestic new issue launches. And its partnership with Toyota. So I think what I'll do is I've been pretty much 20 minutes now, and I'd like to leave some time for any questions if there are any. But I just summarize by saying that in the current environment where interest rates are migrating higher and volatility is likely to pick up, that many investors who are holding what they think to be relatively safe holdings in terms of longer duration, either investment-grade corporate bonds or sovereign debt, may well want to consider a product like the Oyster Fund, which seeks to continue with an attractive level of current income, but also reduces the duration risk significantly in the portfolio while still giving some modest exposure to upside in equities. So, Bertrand, maybe I can leave it there and see if there are any questions.
Sure. Operator, can you remind investors how to ask a question?
Yes, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. As a reminder, should you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad now and wait for your name to be announced. Should you wish to cancel your request, you may press the pound or hash key. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that is star 1 should you wish to ask a question. Once again, that is star 1 should you wish to ask a question. There are no questions. Please continue.
Sure. First of all, thank you, Haas. It was very clear, and I guess that this is one of the reasons why we don't got we haven't questions for today. Also, I would like to thank investors for your time today, for your interest in Oyster Global Convertibles, and I would like to wish you a good afternoon. Bye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.